So handing over to April.
Yep. Hi. Agenda paper 2A, the slide, sets out the board's approach to developing the request for information for the 2020 agenda consultation. And agenda paper 2B is the June agenda paper of matters reported to the board. You see this, the topics referred to the Interpretations Committee since 2016. The discussions today will focus on Agenda Paper 2D, which sets out the suggestions you set us for topics to include in the RFI. Now, I wanted quickly to give you some context about how the suggestions you sent us fit into the process as a whole. We intend for the first time in this agenda consultation to conduct research prior to the RFI to identify and describe potential future projects to include in the RFI for stakeholders to comment on. These potential projects will be fully described in the RFI so that stakeholders will know what they consist of. And that's important because your idea of a project on intangibles might not be my idea of a project on intangibles. So we want to describe the topics and terms needed to define a potential project. What is the problem? Why is it important? And who will be affected? And we've grouped the suggestions you've sent us into themes or topics in the table in paper 2D to structure the discussions. The thing to remember today is that this list of topics in the RFI is just a tool. It's a way of making sure that respondents to the RFI will all have a consistent idea of what it is they're discussing. The board aren't taking agenda decisions in developing the RFI. It will be the responses to the RFI which form the basis of the board's deliberations in 2021. Now, we're also consulting our main consultative groups on this. We've had similar discussions with the GPF and CMAC. The Advisory Council have sent us some suggestions, and suggestions will also be discussed with the Emerging Economies Group and with ASAF in December. So the other thing to bear in mind is how the board manages expectations throughout this process. The board has a number of existing projects, and they'll need to be completed. The board must continue to support implementation and perform its other activities, and the board must retain some contingency to address urgent issues as they arrive. We don't think that the board or other stakeholders have a lot of spare capacity now, and they won't in 2020 when we consult with the RFI. So we think there's probably little capacity anywhere in the reporting system as a whole for too much change or large numbers of new topics. So bear that in mind in today's discussions and think about what you'd include if you were preparing an RFI and how you could ration out the capacity in 2022 to 2026. So I don't know if you've got any questions on the approach or the other papers before we turn to 2D. In 2D, we'll discuss the potential projects and we'll also allow a little time for wider topics such as the balance of the board's activities. Any questions on the approach before we start looking at the list of suggested topics?
Clarification questions?
No? Okay, so I don't know if we want to then look at page 3 of Agenda Paper 2D. There we've got the potential new topics to add to the work plan for discussion today. I don't know if we'd like to just go through them in order. They're listed in order of the largest numbers of people who talked about these discussions. The first one is intangibles. There were a number of you, 5 of you, sent in suggestions on intangibles. So any comments, anything you want to expand on that?
Looking in particular, I guess, at whether it articulates the sort of perspectives that, you know, people were thinking about when they thought about what the project would be about. Mm-hmm. Okay. Bonnie?
I think I would reiterate the comments that I made about IS-38 as being an important standard to revisit. It seems like we continually refer back to it, and it continually is a challenge in terms of what answer it gives and whether or not that is reasonable. Obviously, we're confined by what the standards say as they exist, but more often than not, if IS-38 is anywhere in there, it seems like we have the discussion of, here's what it says, but it doesn't make sense. And it's, you know, there's...
But it says.
But it says, yes, so we're a bit confined in what we can do. And so I think, you know, there are a lot of topics, and I agree with, you know, there were some other folks that had some comments on IS 38 with cryptocurrencies and lots of other things that we've encountered. A lot more of what we deal with today is intangible. There's still a lot of tangible things, particularly in manufacturing and things like that, but there are a lot of intangible things, and I think it's a standard that needs some love.
In summary, needs love.
And I think is that in terms of a fundamental overhaul of 38? Because we've heard suggestions from some that disclosure would be sufficient, but you're looking at a fundamental...
Oh, I don't think disclosure would be sufficient. No, I think it's a fundamental overhaul that I think even if you look at some of the control concepts, at least, you know, when we've had to refer to IS 38 for some specific things, you kind of say... Yes, this is what it says. It doesn't make sense when you think about this, this, or this, referring to other existing standards. And so I firmly believe that it needs an overhaul.
I was just going to clarify, Bonnie, just if it makes sense, because I think some of the more recent things that have come here, and I think where we in talking of the topics have kind of struggled with is it's first of all not about the unrecognized internally generated. I think it's about what we call the acquired intangibles that are coming from just increasing, you know, development and technology and digitalization, etc. And at least in particular, I know some of the things have come up have been around like sort of the recognition criteria and as well as measurements.
Yeah, I would say...
Does that sort of get at what you...
And maybe even interaction with some of the new standards when you think about capitalized R&D, which is, from an American view, still an interesting concept. In terms of you may have inherently, because of the way IFRS 16 is written, costs, some software, some hardware that you may or may not be able to fully distinguish that are related to services that you're getting that are R&D related to new technology. They've met the criteria under IS 38 for capitalization. So how do you, it's a bit round trip. And does that make sense? Are you getting to the right answer? Maybe you get the right answer on the P&L, but you have some classification, but then you have a balance sheet gross up. So just some of the interaction with some of the new standards, that's part of some of the, and that issue, I don't know that has come to the IFRIC, but it's certainly one that are dealing with now.
Okay. Bertrand?
Yeah, that's a topic also I mentioned. As Patrina said, I mean, it's absolutely not to revisit the recognition of internally generated intangible assets. I mean, workforce, customer relationship, and so on and so forth. It has nothing to do with that. It's more maybe incorporates into... So, but I think the change would be fundamental. Just you put the current standard into the dustbin, and you rewrite anything fundamentally. And probably, I think the one of the suggestions I could have, because for me, IS 38 is really the mirror of IFRS 15. So you have a transfer of control notion in IFRS 15, which is quite powerful. So incorporate this into IS 38. Bob wanted consistency on the way control works in IFRS standards. And I think there could be an achievement. And as Bonnie mentioned, and if we go a bit further to that, there could be more consistency between internally generated intangible items that could be intangible assets or working cap assets or whatever, but also in intangible assets acquired in a business combination. Because sometimes you end up having on the balance sheet an intangible asset on an acquired intangible asset in a business combination whereby you don't have any intangible assets, internally generated intangible assets. You have an intangible item that do not effectively meet the criteria to recognize an intangible asset. And then I would question why you end up having working cap assets if you have an advance payment made for an internally generated intangible items or an acquired intangible items, whereby you would recognize an intangible asset when you have a business combination. I mean, there could also improve. So I think the way I see things is not, because I know it's a concern for some ISB board members, the project wouldn't end up increasing the number of intangible assets, it would reduce the number of intangible assets. And I think also then there is no standard dealing with OPEX specifically. It could be also the standard to deal with OPEX. So you have an intangible item that ends up not being an intangible asset, so all you account for it. So fine, if you have an advance payment, it's a working cap asset, but how do you expense it then?
Thank you. Young Sir?
Yeah, I also support overhauling IAS 38 intangibles for many reasons. First of all, 38 is very old. Second of all, the 38 has been written considering only the manufacturing companies. But nowadays we have a lot of other industries like bio industries, IT industries, and 38 is not appropriate for those industries. And also, if you think about the market value and the book value is only about 20% of the market value. And we think that most of the difference, that 80%, is from the intangibles. We are now recognizing some very important intangibles in accounting. And finally, I want to say that, you know, I was surprised when we deal with the cryptocurrency for a while ago. You know, we discussed about how to classify the cryptocurrencies in the current accounting, and we classify the cryptocurrencies into IAS 38 intangibles. And I was really surprised by that. I don't know how to describe it, but it sounds like 38 is a kind of everything that cannot be classified into other standards. So 38 is not something that we just revise. It should be something that we have to start from the beginning.
Okay. I'm just checking with April and others. Is it helpful if the committee members comment on the specific descriptions you've got here, or are you happy just with general observations?
I think general observations are fine, or if there's anything they disagree with, because the descriptions we received were actually very clear and and explanatory, I think.
Michael?
So I would also agree that 38 needs a pretty major overhaul rather than just a disclosure standard. It does seem to me, echoing what Young Si said, that it was written for a research and development world, and it just isn't really fit for purpose in that regard, I think, anymore. And I think we are talking about it internally generated, but that's not the same as saying that everybody wants the workforce on the balance sheet. Just re-looking at that standard again, but also picking up on the point about it being a catch-all standard, I think you may need to be careful about thinking about 38 to have to deal with all assets that aren't dealt with another standard. So much as I would love crypto to be dealt with as well, it doesn't mean that it should be an intangible standard necessarily. So, you know, it might be a different project writing a standard that catches everything that isn't caught somewhere else as a standard that is just for intangibles, if you know what I mean. So we might need to be careful.
Think about the scoping. Makoto?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Sue. Just two comments. One comment is that we fully support cryptocurrency is picked up in comments from the interpretation committee members. So as you remember, that when the IOS school discussed the tentative agenda decision for the holding of a cryptocurrency, we raised a couple of concerns for the application of IS 38 to the cryptocurrencies, and also that raised the necessity to you know, that established a new standard for the cryptocurrency in a longer term. So this, you know, the necessity of the cryptocurrency, it's a very important for the future agenda of the ISB. And the second comment is it's a very general and friendly suggestion. And you know that we just recognize that you know that we have a lot of proposals from the interpretation committee members, but I also understand that there is a limitation of the resources. So that I also think that it's very important to make a prioritize for the, you know, that very important project. And you know that we also have some ongoing project from the past 5 years on the agenda, so that I also think it's very important to make a prioritization of important project.
Thank you. Bob?
I think intangible is an easy one to pick on. Just to give you evidence of why it's needed is people will point you to, well, look at the difference between market caps and balance sheets, and there's a great difference there, and all these unrecognized intangibles, and so you need to have a project on this. We tried this 4 years ago in the U.S. when the U.S. did their agenda consultation, and intangibles was one of those projects that was put on there, and FASB pushed us a bit, and we tried to then think about not just, hey, FASB put intangibles on, it was what would be the scope of it. And once you got the scope, what are the potential solutions? What is the solution set that you would then be choosing from? And when we started to think about the solution set, that's when we went, I have no idea, and it fell to the bottom of the list. So I guess my recommendation is, and I think, you know, intangibles, yeah, there's stuff that we can do, but I think my recommendation would be very careful about and push people on scope and what potential solutions would be. And what also is very interesting about this, and we didn't think about it at the time, but now starting to think about this, is because then you might start to think, well, potential solution would be, because I don't know what to do with measurement, is disclosures. And in that, do we stay in our swim lane, right? So traditionally, we've been in a, you know, in financial reporting in a particular swim lane. We don't deviate out of that. I don't know, intangibles, do we start to think about things outside of the normal, the simple one everybody points to, same store sales, et cetera?
You have a suggestion on scope.
I have a suggestion on scope. Right now, no. Struggled with it 4 years ago, I still.
Just checking. Jim?
I think intangibles are definitely big and worth the attention of this or the board, because now the world is changing toward a service creation oriented. For the previous or the current century or centuries, the world or most of the economy or activities are focusing on the tangible things, the gold, land, building, or inventory as we speak. But now with the technology and the internet, things are more, the world is getting intangibilized, if it's just not even a word. So we try to separate things we can touch, this intangibles. But here we see, as we just talked about, the players, they are intangibles. They have physical appearance or physical things attached to intangibles. For example, the phone. Historically, the phone worth a lot by the resources we put in to make it work. But now it's the technology, the service, the apps embedded in the phone is worth more than the phone itself. It could be a giant machine. Previously, the machinery should be the asset, the tangible asset, the PP&Es, or the other equipment. But now, many companies or the service providers are thinking the service or technology embedded in the equipment worth more, and they should have a better way to account for the effort or their output. So I think in terms of scope, it's definitely big, bigger than the IS-38 defined list of things or concepts. We should really open up these intangibles toward the new world to see, all right, we have these creative deliveries that carries both the tangible form and with the significant part of intangible things, so that we give the world a signal that just back to Bob's discussion during the lunch, can you get to control your kids through the intangible way. You send them the message, right? Not even talking to them. So the way of activities are changing dramatically. So we should adopt our accounting logic into the world so we give them better guidance on the value or the activities, the meaning, the accounting meaning of these so-called intangibles. So if it's up to me to define, it's way beyond the IS-38. We should think of something bigger to show the world why the books, the number on the books, are totally different from the views by the market analysts or by the investors or by the effort the economy, the companies, the governments are putting into these so-called intangibles. It's a bigger resource, and it's a war in the new territory. So it's big.
Thank you. Carsten?
Yeah, thanks. So I guess echoing what some others have said, I guess I've kind of mixed feeling on this one, because I think it's too big of an issue to just ignore it. So something should be done about this. I also agree with the point on scope that obviously, you know, we need to think about, you know, how can we make it work? With all the problems around, you know, measurement in particular, and recognition and measurement of intangible assets. So that requires some careful thinking. I don't think we can just ignore it, given all the questions that come up around intangibles. The additional point I wanted to make is, you know, there is a lot of discussion around, you know, initial recognition, subsequent measurement, and things like that. But I wonder whether there's also a question around derecognition of intangibles. That's also quite a tricky area, I think, especially because, you know, different than other assets, you face the problem of componentization, I think, for intangibles, right? So when you acquire an intangible asset, I think, you know, that's quite easy. You have one intangible asset that you acquired, but you can then obviously sell that same asset in components, right? If you think about a right, you know, a right to market a product, let's say, across the world, right? You could then start componentizing that by saying, well, I actually only sell that on for, let's say, North America or something like that, or only for a period of time, not for the entire useful life. So that raises a lot of complexities and also links to the point I think that Bertrand made about revenue recognition. When do you recognize revenue? So I think that's also one of the aspects that should be considered. And I agree with the point on scope. We should be very careful what we can actually do before, in terms of, you know, spending resources. This is going to take quite a few resources, so we should be careful about, you know, investing those resources, you know, keeping in mind what we think we can realistically achieve.
Okay, thank you. Brian?
I am also a strong supporter of doing something on intangibles. I suspect whatever group you poll will put intangibles pretty close to the top of the list. If the board can manage just one big project in the next 5, maybe 10 years, I would choose intangibles. I'm very alive to the challenges of landing anything at all if the project is scoped in $2,000 away. I wonder if it would be necessary, even at the RFI level or stage in the process, to kind of break it down and to have some kind of initial assessment of what might be priority areas within the broader topic of intangibles to try and get people who respond to be much more, well, to be as specific as they reasonably can. I think the test must have decided to go ahead must be that it would be possible to complete something within a given number of years, given the warnings from history. My own thoughts as to what I might focus on, perhaps focusing on intangibles acquired in exchange transactions rather than fully rewriting internally generated might be one way, or at least distinguishing between exchange and internally generated might be one way to try and limit the scope. In exchange transactions, I think there's an interesting bunch of scope and definition questions where you are acquiring an intangible as part of a larger transaction, whether you're buying a phone or a car or subscribing for a cloud contract, you know, what exactly is the test to tell you whether or not you've got a transaction and an intangible? And if you think you have an intangible, what's the allocation guidance, which is something that I don't think is really dealt with at the moment. I then think there are specific aspects of measurement that have been problematic in the past and are just still there. What to do with intangibles, what to do with variable payments associated with the acquisition of an intangible. Obviously, was at this committee over a very long period of time, and it would be very interesting to see if it was possible to reach a landing on that, given that there was at least a landing on IFRS 16. And for me, an interesting part of this on subsequent measurement is whether or not there's a case for investigating a fair value through P&L model for some types of intangible. That felt like it would have been quite a comfortable part of a cryptocurrency kind of answer. I think if that accounting model was possible within intangibles, that might deal with some of the things, the question we discussed earlier about transfers. You know, if it really is somebody's business model to be developing players, then it would be really interesting to see those kind of movements in P&L. And maybe that's a silly idea, but my overall kind of message is do intangibles, try and break it down before you send out the IFI, so that you can move forward with a well-defined, possibly segmented project where you could drop bits and go ahead with other aspects of it with a view to actually concluding something in the working life of at least somebody in this room.
Thank you. Goro.
Thank you. I agree that the intangible is definitely the one agenda which we should consider. I think that the intangibles are such a broad topic, so that I think that we can probably thought out that what is an urgent agenda on intangibles. For example, clearly we need overhaul of IAS 38. On the other hand, such new emerging topics like internally generated intangibles or cryptocurrencies, maybe these are more suitable for a research project. So that by identifying, sorting out a part of the intangibles which are more urgent and or more suitable for the longer-term research project, that I think that we can, make our resources allocation better.
Marie?
Yeah, I just want to echo what Makoto said on prioritization. If you look at what is already not finished or on the agenda, we have primary financial statement, right, regulated, goodwill and impairment, business combination under common controls, the different post-implementation review, FICE. So, the agenda is quite full without adding things. So I think it's quite important to ask all the people what they want to deprioritize and not only the new priorities they have. Otherwise, will be full without even starting. So we run the risk of being one agenda ahead of what can be done by the ESB, which is clearly important. And I also wanted just to remind that there is a post-implementation review on IFRS 5, which was planned before and has not started yet, and which is something we consider quite important because we, as it was emphasized to the IFRSCC at that time, it's a standard on which we have quite a lot of issue and quite often.
Okay, thank you. Before I start letting people back in, I've already spoken. Carl, have you spoken before? No? You come in.
Yes, thank you. Of course, I'm supportive of prioritizing intangible assets, number one priority. And to me, especially the topic of initial recognition and variable payments, for sure, it's to me one of the biggest lacks in the standard.
Thanks, Carl. Mary?
Listening to people's comments, and this is maybe building on a thought similar to what Brian expressed about intangibles, I did start wondering, and I'd appreciate initial reactions from people around the table, about whether a way of parsing do something about intangibles might be, how much do you think the issue is that it's the catch-all for something that doesn't have others, you know, another home? And is maybe focusing on the scope one thing. And another way of thinking about that might be, is there an identifiable or describable group of items that, if taken out of IS 38 and moved to their own standard, you know, newly developed standard, might make the catch-all nature of IS 38 something that we could live with again if it was applying, you know, if it was applying to a smaller population of items. I'm not fighting to defend IS 38, but I'm, you know, thinking along Brian's lines of, it might be a grand project that gets nowhere if you try to solve everything that could fit within today's definition of IS 38, and is maybe the way to address it by taking certain things out and addressing those things, so leaving IS 38 applying to fewer things. And interested in, for example, something we, this group, I think, discussed about we don't have a standard on investments. You know, that was one thing we looked at. If we were to do standard setting on crypto, should we do a project on investments that might cover art and crypto, you know, and other things? How, you know, asking people how much that would solve. Is it taking out, you know, Brian, I think, advocated initially thinking about purchased, in, you know, intangibles acquired in an exchange transaction is, I think, your more precise description. Another smaller category might be licenses. So maybe it's, is there a particular category of item that fits within IS 38 that is a disproportionate source of tension for that standard? So that if you could pick that out and deal with it, you might get 70% of the win, but feasible to accomplish. And would it be helpful to express that category in that way?
Bertrand?
I think BC5 of current IS 38 provides a good starting point to assess the scope of what could be a future standard on intangibles. And maybe because it defines what an intangible item is. So if you... I will begin with the second paragraph of BC5. The board concluded that the purpose for which an entity holds an item with these characteristics is not relevant to its classification as an intangible asset, and that all such items should be within the scope of the standard. So I will just transform a bit the first paragraph then of BC5. And the essential characteristics of intangible items, it states assets, but it's a presumption of a conclusion which... I think he is reversed by the second paragraph in BC5. So the essential characteristic of intangible items are that they are resources controlled by the entity from which future economic benefits are expected to flow to the entity, lack physical substance, and are identifiable, which is a good definition of an intangible item. And I think the scope of what we should deal with is just that, just what is already written in IS 38. But... The problem is not to redefine the scope. The problem is just to, once you have the scope, then on applying a real control definition of what is the what you control exactly when you have an intangible item, then assess whether you account for an intangible asset or something else. And if it's an intangible asset, oh, you account for it. If it's something else, oh, you account for it. And that's all. I mean, then make a parallel with IFRS 15, the transfer of control of IFRS 15. There is no nothing in IS 38 that currently mirror the sale of a right to access in IFRS 15, so just add that. So I don't see the scope as being a big problem. Otherwise, you never do anything. And if you need to prioritize something, for sure, it's IS 38 before many, many other aspects that were listed by Marie earlier. For sure.
Thank you. And Bonnie.
I just wanted to make the point, I think it was Bob that said it. I personally think we should capitalize less, not more.
Yeah,
squares perfectly with what Bertrand was saying, that I think the concept of control, as well as how you think about economic benefits to be received by the entity, to be a pretty high hurdle for capitalization. Yeah, otherwise, you're going to have a bunch of crap on your balance sheet that you then have to... It's a technical accounting term. Yeah. That you then have to...
Yeah.
Well, then you have to account for, assess for impairment, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think I'm quite aligned with where Bertrand was going.
So rather than trying, per se, to bridge the gap between book equity and market capitalization, for example, it's like a much broader potential recognition and measurement change. Mm. Guy?
The scope discussion, I, as I was listening to it, I was thinking, you know, one way of managing scope is to not necessarily pick, a cross-cutting theme like, you know, recognition, subsequent measurement, you know, exchange transactions or internally generated, but topics that people are facing in practice today that we struggle with. And I think this is maybe similar to what you were suggesting, Mary. Is there a way of leaving 38 in place? Because, you know, broadly speaking, it works okay in identifying and intangibles in exchange transactions and, you know, business combinations. I can help think through, you know, what is intangible with 38. But then go and address some specific topics. And the one word you mentioned that I think is a really good one is licenses. And in today's world, there is so much more outsourcing going on than there used to be. And what is that arrangement? Does that arrangement, you know, implicitly create a license to technology that you can control in today's day and age in a sense that's different with how we thought about it historically? And in trying to tackle something like that, you know, as its own sort of scoped project, but leaving 38 in place, you know, will hopefully in a reasonable period of time provide guidance to a question that is coming up time and time again in practice. And it may help us advance our thinking and how to think about other intangibles once we've tackled that and have come up with a good solution. So, that approach to scoping, I think, you know, is something that is perhaps worth exploring. And your reference to licenses, I think, is maybe a good thing to reflect on.
Guy, this comes from a statement with which I strongly disagree. IS 38 doesn't work today. You were mentioning that IS 38 works. No, it doesn't. No. You just need to put that in the dustbin and rethink everything from the start. Even though some might not want that, but it's true.
He said the definition works.
The definition works quite well as a starting point. Yeah. You might elaborate on that, but then on the rest, on everything except the definition, that doesn't work.
Young Su.
I don't think definition works, though. However, you know, I just want to add one thing. We can work on the disclosure requirement. Maybe the internally generated intangibles cannot be assetized because of the measurement problem, but we can require the companies to report some of the spendings on the internally generated assets, I mean, intangibles. So that might be a big improvement, at least, in the disclosure requirement. So we can think of, in many ways, many people say, you know, the making, reviving, or overhauling 38 is impossible or difficult. But if we think, I believe that there could be many ways to improve it, at least.
Okay, so I've got Carl, Michael and Carl down, and then I think we should try and move off the committee's favourite topic and onto other ones.
I'm a little unsettled by the suggestion of taking things out of this scope of 38. Similar to Guy, I think 38 works reasonably well. And probably the suggestion to a full overhaul, which I would not object, but it's more linked to aesthetics than the concepts inside the current world, probably because of that. My concern is starting taking out things of the scope where we will end up with industry level standards again. I think that's the major risk. Therefore, I would not support this approach.
Michael?
So I like the idea of trying to narrow the scope a bit. I think it probably wouldn't work if you pick individual types of assets, because then 2 years down the line we'll be getting questions about an asset that's slightly different and you're back into 38. But if there are features of those assets, then that could be a way. But so just, you know, thinking as the discussion has gone along, one of the issues about over-recognition of intangibles is probably the ones which are separable but not contractual in IFRS 3. So, and it may still be too broad, but maybe if you concentrate on contractual and legal rights, which would be kind of consistent with IFRS 15 and 16's ideas, whether they're internally generated and you create a contractual right, or if they're purchased, maybe that's a way to narrow it. I don't know if it's narrow enough, but it's just an idea.
Carsten, last word?
Yeah, responding to Mary's comment, I mean, personally, I don't really have a preference in terms of, you know, do we do something separate and then make IS38 narrow, or do we make an overhaul to the intangible standard? I think, you know, again, the scoping is really important for me, and I just would like to echo Brian's point about the exchangeability thought, because I think, you know, when talking about this whole issue about, you know, a lag between or gap between the market cap and, you know, the recognized intangibles, I just think, you know, history has shown that we're not going to solve that, right? So we can think about that, but if we do, I think it's going to be mostly disclosures rather than recognition and measurement. So I would probably focus on the exchangeability thought. It could be subsets of that, then, if you think about licenses and things like that. Although I would perhaps comment that we don't even know what a license is, right? It's not defined, and currently also only some license agreements are in the scope of IS38. So I probably it's worth, you know, just thinking more broadly about exchange transactions. Think about the accounting for transactions where you have an exchange of, you know, some consideration and a right, some intangible asset. And I think it would be going both ways, you know, both from the perspective of the buyer and the seller. That, to me, would be a reasonable way to narrow it down.
Now we go on. Is there anything more we want to say about cryptocurrencies? I know we've touched on them as part of intangibles. Would we like to,
Bruce?
Yeah. It's no secret to people around this table. I heavily objected to the inclusion of cryptocurrencies in IS38. I thought it was wrong. I guess the reason I was one of the people who brought up cryptos, I mean, cryptos to me currently has the potential to completely disrupt the markets as we know them. And I think that yes, it's still early days, and yes, I think it's difficult to turn around and say this is something that's not going to impact us in the short term. But given this is something that the board's going to be addressing more in the kind of medium term, I think that we cannot get into a situation where we have companies, I mean, we're talking about some very serious offerings happening at the moment in that whole space, coming out and there's just no accounting guidance around it. I think it would be very disruptive. So I think they should address it as more of a proactive accepting this as something that's on the horizon than leaving alone. And when I say cryptos, I mean, I think that if you're going to start looking at that, the things like the ICOs, all those issues start coming into play.
Sorry, could I just ask a question there? Do you see that as being a separate thing on cryptocurrencies and ICOs, those sorts of things, as opposed to one of the suggestions that we did have was a broader type standard on other types of investments?
I guess, I mean, it was just interesting, drawing up on the IS-38 discussion, I mean, I wonder if Mary's approach wouldn't solve a lot of the problems, because, interestingly, I'm also in the camp where I don't think IS-38 is a disaster. I think that a lot of the problems has become a sweep standard where nothing's put in. So I think the idea, if we take things out of there, like cryptos and those type of things out of that standard, I'd be interested if we identified what are the top 10 things giving people a headache there. I guarantee 8 of them could probably be solved with a scoping situation. And then we could look at potentially at a separate standard, dealing with this like an investment standard or something. But then then kind of limits what you're going to do in there. So I'm not necessarily saying where it needs to be addressed. I think that's something that needs to be discussed. But you're right, maybe, I mean, you look at all the different types of investments, maybe there is now space to do an investment standard on all these things that are not falling into 9 and not really falling into anything else.
Okay, thank you.
Do we want to add anything to the comment written on other investments, which is the other new topic which we've has been suggested?
Yes, we move on.
Yeah. Now, for the other suggested topics, we've had quite a few new topics suggested. I don't know if we want to go through them just in turn to see if anyone would like to comment on cash flows, which is a suggestion. And obviously, this suggestion was much discussed in the CMAC meeting, as you can imagine. There were a number of comments made in that paper by members.
Yes, Bonnie.
Discount rates?
Bonnie.
Oh, sorry. Yep. Bonnie. So just maybe a couple of comments. I think the hyperinflation is relevant. I think we've tried to deal with that. I think there are some different facts that are becoming much more common that are not addressed within the standard. So perhaps that's an update and not a whole rewrite of that.
Is this the distinction between hyper and high inflation? Or, yeah.
Yeah, that particular topic.
Yeah. Is it maybe just to clarify, but is it the mechanics of how you do hyperinflationary accounting once you have
There's probably that, but there's also some of the definitions of what...
The threshold,
yes, okay. Thank you. Yeah, just some of the conversations that we've had about Venezuela, which I know we've struggled a bit, but I think there are some things that we... that could be done in the existing standards to maybe update them a bit.
Okay, thank you.
Then one suggestion that I was curious about was the comment to suppress the balance sheet approach on IS-12. And I wasn't entirely sure what that meant. Does that mean focus on the P&L result, or my personal view is taxes are hard enough. People don't understand it. Let's work with what we have there, because there's probably more bigger fish to fry.
Would anyone like to respond to
no,
that?
No, yeah, it's me that said it.
Oh.
It was just maybe a provocative way of saying. Yeah, because I'm sitting next to Mary, so she inspired me.
To be provocative.
I inspire no one about ice.
No, to be provocative. And just we could simplify things, for sure. The standard is so complicated.
IS-12?
Sorry?
IS-12.
IS-12. Honestly, it's not the place to do that, but... the ED that was recently issued, the wording of the ED that was recently issued to just
provide deferred tax assets and liabilities on IFRS 16. I mean, honestly, it's barely understandable. Barely understandable. And the problem is we are effectively probably mixing things there, and we are stuck in a balance sheet approach. Mm-hmm. And we need absolutely each time you amend IS 12 to stick on this balance sheet approach. Mm-hmm. So that I was just saying, simplify things. And if we need to get rid of the balance sheet approach and think of something else mm-hmm. to simplify, mm-hmm. then simplify. But if there are other means of simplifying, I mean, I don't have a problem on the principle with the balance sheet approach. What I'm just saying is that effectively when you apply it, you encounter numerous practical questions. And that's just to try to find a way to solve those practical mm-hmm. questions. You have so many exceptions, and you have so many exceptions to the exceptions. I mean, it's like the French grammar.
Can I ask you what priority you'd place? I think Marie's point was a good reminder to us. I don't think we've got a heck of a lot of free capacity ourselves or in the market. So how important do you think that IS-12 project would be to you, and relative to your crypto baby, for example?
Sorry?
Relative to your IES-38 baby, for example.
No, IS-38 is obviously the top priority. But honestly, let's put it differently. Goodwill or impairment, honestly, for me, it's not a priority. I don't have a problem with accounting for goodwill, performing impairment tests. It's just the convention, so I don't have any problem with that. So, you could spare time then to I mean, I have no problem. I have other ideas if you want.
Okay. So I think just to put some structure to this to try and help April and team, I think now basically discussing comments people have got under topic 3, other suggested topics, so the rest of page 4 down to the sort of first half of page 5.
And I don't know if we want to just go through the topics very quickly.
Not sure that we need to, because I'm hoping people have read it.
Okay.
And along these lines, could I just make a request? I think what I'd like to hear most about other suggested topics is there something you don't understand from the description given, or is there something that you really say, if the description includes something like would be a large project, that you're saying large is understating it, or, you know, I don't see why it would have to be large. You know, more the, if you were responding to an RFI based on these descriptions, would you understand what is being described and be able to assess it? Not make your case now for what it's...
And I guess if you were the person who put it forward, describe what you sort of mm-hmm. wanted captured. Carsten?
Yeah, I just wanted to also commenting on the matters of priority. I also think, given, there will be quite a few questions coming up with regards to the new standards that are out there already. So I really think there should be a focus on maintenance rather than adding new big projects to the agenda. Perhaps the one area that I really think where work should be done is the area of variable contingent consideration. I think that is extremely widespread, and we see that, I mean, we debated it before in the context of intangibles. So I think that's probably my top pick from the list. Other than that I just think focus should be on maintenance. There will be enough work to do.
Okay, thank you. Bruce.
Thanks, Sue. I kind of need to put on my PAFA hat for a moment and make a case for something. I know it's not we're here to do, but I feel I need to, because the one challenge that we have across Africa is we don't get people writing into submissions. If there's any topic on this entire list I get lobbied about until I want to be sick, it's on the SMEs. And the reason I say that is if you look at the approach that the board's currently taking, well, it looks like it's taking, obviously there's a lot of work in the background, with the IFRS for SMEs, it's moving a lot closer to big IFRS and it's probably going to move away from big IFRS. That means we're being left with a massive gap. As that standard becomes more complex, there is a huge number of companies that are basically going to say, hang on, this has become too complex for us, we're not going to use it. Now, I'm not going to use the word a micro gap, I'm not going to use a small gap, but I guess I would just point out that when you talk about the number, and obviously I accept this isn't a market cap issue, but when you talk about the number of reporters who are going to be left if the SME standard goes to a more complex kind of IFRS light, we're talking about tens of millions of companies who are just going to be left with nothing. And I think you need to understand that's something that small companies are the gateway to people eventually growing, building up, and these are potentially the future big companies. To have that gateway into using full IFRS, we need to make sure we provide an ecosystem for these people to build their way through. And I just think that as much as I accept that yes, there is a limited capacity to do these things, I think that's one project where I think there is a potential to partner with some of the institutes around the world who have done huge work on it and potentially do something in the shorter term that wouldn't be as big an issue.
Bruce, are you talking about the idea of doing more work to support the existing IFRS standard,
no.
Or are you saying create another
companion? I'm saying that if the big IFRS goes the way we think it's going to go,
IFRS for SMEs
yeah. kind of goes closer to big IFRS, which is the intention, I'm saying a lot of the true SMEs at the bottom are going to say, hang on, you start introducing things
so
like
that. It's not about educational material.
No, it's not educational material. It's almost a framework different. For companies at the smaller
layer.
Yeah.
Michael?
Just one quick one. This is probably more with my UK hat on than my Basel one, because this wasn't anything that we raised. But I think going concern is probably quite an important topic, and its interaction with the auditing standards as well. So it's kind of joint accounting and auditing thing about how well understood the going concern basis is and when it should be used and what the disclosures are and then what the auditing requirements are. And I think there is something there that could be valuable for users in the marketplace. But it's not as important as intangibles, of course.
Going concern, April, a topic close to your heart.
It is indeed, and I just wonder, given that the board discussed this 4 years ago, when circumstances, I think, were broadly the same because we were aware of the IASB's new standards and things, what do you think anything has changed that the board should relook at what they looked at, or...?
I guess what I hear is, when I look at the auditing side, oh, well, there's no requirement on the accounting side for the directors to do X, Y, or Z. So it feels like there's some gap there in terms of assessment of the concern and viability. And
Bruce, do you want to jump
just,
in?
Just quickly on that. I interesting you read that. I haven't picked up. I think it's a fantastic topic. I think what's changed since then is that I think the market at the moment is very different to where it was 4 years ago. There is huge pressure at the moment when companies, things are going wrong. And the criticism coming in that there's no comment on going concern. And whereas I accept that is obviously an audit issue, we've received the same issue. People are saying that, hang on, this should also be an accounting issue. The market's changed.
Young Su?
I just want to say about the separate financial statements. I want to say that separate financial statements are very important for some countries that has been used the separate financial statement for a long time. So, for example, Korea has adopted IFRS in 2011. But before that, for about 40 years, we have been used the separate financial statements. And all legal systems and many other very important decisions are based on the separate financial statements. So, for example, listing decision, listing a company onto the stock market is also based on the separate financial statements. Delisting decision, also based on the separate financial statements. And tax is also based on the separate financial statements, so that... Now, what I'm trying to say is that without separate financial statements, our economy is not that clearly show the real status of the companies at all. And I also believe that, you know, Korea would not be the only country that takes the separate financial statement as an important financial statement. Any other countries, maybe separate financial statement would not be important for most of the countries, but many countries. But many other countries that has been used the separate financial statement for a long time and newly adopted IFRS who think that separate financial statement is important. And just one more thing I want to say is that we always thought that separate financial statement has a different viewpoint. Constantly financial statement is emphasized in the economic entity. However, you know, separate financial statement is emphasized in the legal entity. And many accounting could be different depending upon what kind of view we have with a separate constantly the financial statements, and that has been largely ignored on in IAS 27. So many people are really concerning about 27 separate financial statements.
Sorry, could I just, I don't want lots of detail, but some examples of situations where you think
in the committee, we once talked about the, I think, step acquisition of the securities. And we took the view of the economic entity side. So that decision comes up with something very different from what we thought in Korea. We always thought separate financial statement takes the view of the legal entity. So there is a kind of example. If you want, I can send you a bunch of examples.
That would be quite helpful. Thank you.
Bertrand?
On the list, subject surprised me, it's the one on discount rates. I see no difficulty in having different discount rates applying to different types of liability. You can imagine having a risk-free discount rate for press two share-based payments, having a corporate AA bond rates reflecting the duration of a defined benefit pension scheme, using the weighted average cost of capital to discount a DCF computation using IAS 36 on impairment testing. I think the current notions on discount rates, they reflect the mere nature of the underlying commitments or liabilities. So I don't see that as a mere problem. And it would seem odd to me to have a uniform discount rate to apply across all IFRSs. I don't know if the one who mentioned the point want to comment on that, but I was surprised.
It was from me. It was, maybe a couple of comments on that. First of all, I think it was just a general remark regarding the measurement of liabilities, and I think the interest rate is just one part of that. I agree that there are, maybe reasons to use different interest rates for certain types of, let's say, assets or liabilities. But I just wasn't convinced we need, 10 different interest rates when discounting assets and liabilities. And maybe to add, there are even some standards like IAS 37 where you don't have clear guidance on what interest rates to use. Then you have the whole issue about negative interest rates. Some standards allow you to or require you to go negative. So there are lots of issues involved, and I was just wondering whether, we really need like 10 different interest rates for discounting. But it wasn't limited to interest rates, just more generally the measurement of liabilities, also the issue about contingent variable consideration. So many different concepts, and I was just thinking that that might be one area to think about. But, in terms of prioritizing things, I think it in the longer term, it's worth looking at that, but we probably have more urgent issues on the agenda at the moment.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Shall we move on now to the next section, suggestions relating to existing or planned projects? Did anybody have anything specific that you wanted to touch on there? So we've got the equity accounting project and the variable consideration topics in here. We're already working on the IFRS 13 fair value disclosures, obviously. Anything anybody wanted to raise in response to what's included here? Anything missing? Anything you disagreed with? Anything unclear? Why?
I would just make an observation. In the request, one of the assumption or operating assumption I had in mind was, the projects that were in place were going to continue. So I wasn't trying to sort of rate those in the context of this request. So I would just observe the absence of certain projects on this list. I wouldn't take as an indication that they're not important, like business combinations under common control or something like that. I think at least my operating assumption was those will continue and what else is important.
Yeah, and that's right. We were asking for new topics to add.
Lisa.
And I was going to say, yeah, significant influence. I think this is an area that it would be really good if we got some additional guidance, because some people apply, you have to have a 20% equity interest to be significant influence. If you're one percentage below, you're not. Others say you have one board seat, that creates significant influence. And so I think a bit of additional guidance there, how you look collectively at all the facts to determine how, whether or not significant influence exists or not, would be actually very helpful.
Okay. All right. Please. Thank you. The equity method accounting. Besides that, the reasons like that the online consolidation of variation, that in Japan we are some concerned that the kind of numerical threshold of 20%. That the IFRS is kind of principle-based standards, but this is too rule-based. And also, based upon the legal framework of each jurisdiction, 20% might be, appropriate or not. So I think that the equity method accounting has so many, problems, and also that the ISB promised that to open this research project when that the IFRS 11, PIL. So that it may not be that agenda decision, but rather that PIL. But anyway, that I think that the equity method accounting has so many problems.
Yeah, I also want to say something about the equity method. This is a very specific Korean example, but Korea has many conglomerates, and some conglomerates have more than 60-100 affiliated companies. Their ownership of those companies are not high at all, like 20%, 35%. So most of them are applying the equity method for those affiliated companies. I just look at one holding company's financial statement before I come to the meeting. On the equity method, that income was almost about 70% of the operating net income for that holding company. So I should say that equity method is very important. It should have a very big impact on the financial statements of some companies, I should say. As it's written in this paper, we don't know what really is the objective of 28. Sometimes consolidation, sometimes measurement. At least we have to define what is the objective of IAS 28, which has a big impact on the financial.
That was a nice, easy question. Guy, do you have your card up again, from last time? Okay. All right. Not sure if I can face the comments about the PIR of IFRS 9 at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Any comments on the balance of the board's activities?
So, can I back up for a moment on onerous contracts? Sorry, sure. So we're going in order. I think I know that this is already on the board for discussion as a part of another project, but I think as far as giving more guidance or defining how you take into account benefits and determining your net cash outflows on a contract would be very helpful, because it's easy if you're dealing with a contract, say for example like a supply contract to buy a widget, and you have to figure out, okay, well, what would be the value if I bought the inventory and I sold it to net it against everything. But when you get more complicated contracts like IT service agreements and that, in other types of ways, it's very difficult to know what is the benefit within the contract you should be taking into account versus something that is actually outside of it. And so I think this would be actually a very helpful area to get more guidance there.
Not sure how much of that Joan's touching on the 37 already, but okay. So comments on the balance of the board's activities. Did anybody have anything they wanted to add there? Any comments, reactions to what we've got there already? A couple of you have made comments about maintenance. So. Mary?
Sue, do you mind if I throw out a question, maybe see what people say? There was a lot of catch-up work that this committee has really supported in terms of clearing the backlog of issues 5 years ago at the Interpretation Committee. And agenda decisions, but also as the originator of narrow scope amendments, including AIPs, recognizing that there was catch-up and that people are also still suffering a bit of exhaustion from the major new standards being implemented, to what extent do you think the stream of tuning from narrow scope standard setting using Petrina's broader definition earlier is too little, too much, about right? You know, and how should we raise this in terms of the overall concern about stable platform for IFRS standards? I mean, I think that's one of the balance of work questions that we'll both have to address and get feedback on. And how do we tee that up most constructively?
To answer your question, Mary, I think I would prefer, personally, as a preparer, not as a committee member, but as a preparer, I would prefer a huge project on IS 38 that will enable me to have, at the end, maybe in 5 years, 6 years, 7 years' time, never mind, but at the end, we'll have a comprehensive overview of all aspects relating to the accounting for intangible items, rather than having each year a couple of agenda decisions, one minor amendment on a very teeny aspect of IS 38, which will solve maybe a particular problem, but will ask numerous additional questions on various comments. I mean, we discussed earlier, and I made a comment that I was surprised by that on the subject relating to the transfer of player. Paragraph 14 of the agenda paper. I find it amusing from my perspective as a preparer in the media industry, because another respondent says the question could arise in the media and entertainment industry if an entity owns film broadcasting rights. In most cases, you do not own a film broadcasting right; you use it. So there is almost a misinterpretation there, and so we have issued. And one of the comments I made relating to the transfer of player was just to be careful on not interacting, amending IS 38 to solve this particular issue, to add some elements in IS 38 that could have unintended consequences on other elements. So, as a preparer, once again, I would prefer a big project on IS 38 that would solve. Not immediately, but in some years' time, that will set that will provide a new set of principles, of accounting principles that will be thoroughly applicable and overall applicable, rather than each year having a minor amendment or a couple of agenda decisions on IS 38 to solve a teeny issue that could have negative consequences on our activities.
Stepping away from IS 38, which you think is a standard but that's what I was checking, that is a standard that I think you have identified as particularly ripe for reconsideration. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that way about the other narrow scope activities? You know, are they still doing good? Are they still necessary to keep things working? Or
yeah, for sure you need maintenance activities. My concern would then to make to if you need to. I thought your question was to assess the balance between a project redefining a more holistic understanding of an accounting principle of an accounting concept, rather than having minor standard setting activities or agenda decision issued on the same subject. I quoted IS 38, but it could be on other subjects too. And sometimes it's better reconsidering things globally than just focusing on minor aspects. But I must admit on quite... So Henry is not there, but effectively IFRS 15 is quite working well, providing many answers and so on and so forth. I would not expect an overall project to redefine everything within IFRS 15, but then you could have
eventually, if necessary, minor amendments to clarify
but, things. But you also don't want to say do nothing on 15 for the next 2 years just to
but
get it
frozen. It will depend on the questions.
Right. So you want to be continue to be responsive.
Yeah, sure, okay. Sure. But I would say not that much, Mary, on IFRS 15. I would expect that there is not that much, maybe. Okay. But it will depend on the flows of questions.
We exhausted ourselves. What you need, ladies? Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Look forward to how you summarise all that.